to offer something that I think maybe what I find very useful as both the practice and as a contemplation. And it is really the reflection upon how our personal world is constructed and born moment to moment. And in Buddhist teaching, there's so much emphasis that is given to understanding this, because, of course, we tend to make the assumption that our personal world is a completely accurate description of the world as it is. It's very clear that our sense doors, our eyes, our ears, our body, taste, smell, and of course the mind, that our sense doors are very much our windows to the world. It is through our sense doors that we interface with and interact with the world moment to moment. And it is through really what happens at our sense doors that our personal world is really constructed and born. Now, the Buddha gave this very short list to describe how this occurs that I'd just like to run through with you. It begins with contact, the meeting of the sense door and the sensory object and the knowing of it. So the eye and the sight and the seeing. The nose, the scent, and the smelling, you know, the body, the sensation, and the feeling. And this is all, of course, part of all of our world. This is called contact, the meeting of the sense door, sensory impression, and the knowing of it. Now, each moment that occurs, there is a feeling tone that happens. There are sights we see as pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, sounds we hear as pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Again, this is very much part of human experience. Very often at this point of that feeling tone, something else starts to happen. We like certain sights and dislike others. There's aversion, there's craving, or there's simply dismissal if it's neutral, we don't even see it. That pleasant, that the way that the pleasant is overtaken by wanting more of it, to keep it. The way that the unpleasant is overtaken by aversion, by pushing it away, by wanting to get rid of it. The way that the neutral is kind of blotted out from our consciousness as being insignificant. Through those underlying tendencies that take hold of feeling tones, we begin, as we see it, to build our personal world. Sometimes then there's a further intensification of that liking, not liking. There's a kind of grasping, and I become aversive, you know, I become needy, I become angry, I become frustrated. It is very much my world being born moment to moment. If I give you an example of this, I was talking to John and Jackie about it last night. A couple of weeks ago, I was walking down the aisle in Selfridges, just going about a normal, you know, task, when I suddenly found myself faced with this very bare and toned, naked torso of a man. And he's quite a bit bigger than me, and, you know, and I sort of stood back a little bit and realized here was this man standing there in the aisle, naked, apart from a very wee pair of briefs. And then I looked around, and there was a whole bunch of them standing around naked, apart from these little pairs of briefs. And I sort of thought, well, this is one of those classic moments of how the world could be born. You know, my first thought was, actually, we don't do this in my neck of the woods, you know. Yeah. Actually, you know, I was kind of like a bit startled, but I thought that if I had a more puritanical mind, you know, I could be very aversive. You know, this shouldn't be happening. You know, why would this happen? You know, the world is filled with this kind of immorality and, you know, lack of modesty, etc. If I had a very sort of lustful mind, something else would occur entirely. But it would be my world of the moment. It would be my world of the moment. If I was really really mindful in that moment, what would the difference be? The sight would be the sight. The seeing would be the seeing. Just that. No story attached to it. No building of this personal world, this personal construction, that then becomes, in a way, very much my prison, in a sense. Now, if you reflect on how many times that happens in a single day. We sit here, we hear a sound outside, you know, oh, it's a truck. No, I can never get any silence in my life. Oh, no, it's a truck. It might be some, you know, delivery of something I really wanted. You know, a sight, how many times we're building our world. Just reflect on how many countless times that happens in a single day when we seem to bounce from one world to another, which governs, of course, our experience, governs our response. And then it just seems to pass. Often that world, how does that world, it can last for a long time, can't it? It can last for a long time through dwelling or obsession. Or sometimes that world really gets kind of pushed out of the way because through another contact moment, you know, another sight, another sound, where a very similar process starts to happen again. In the sort of Buddhist tradition, that the sense doors are often portrayed as being these open windows where the world with all the sense impressions are flowing in. And our inner world with all our tendencies and habits and beliefs and opinions and judgments are flowing out. But of course other things can be flowing out too. You know, kindness, generosity, compassion. But the sensors often portrayed as this open window where there's this flow in, flow out of the inner world and the outer world. And in terms of discovering inner freedom and contentment and stillness, the Buddha encouraged so strongly for us to be mindful at the sense doors. To be mindful at the sense doors, and including the sense door of the mind. That this is the most significant place to bring mindfulness to. To know that we are not helpless in those that process of constructing moment to moment. We can feel helpless if we don't feel actually present and aware there. But to know that if we can be mindful at the sense doors, we're kind of short-circuiting this process of construction, which often takes us to places very far from where we want to be. Now, sometimes, of course, we think this process of construction takes us to places that we want to be. For example, sometimes it feels very attractive to be lost, doesn't it, in a sort of, you know, great fantasy or, you know, great plan or a great romantic ideal. It can feel very, very enjoyable temporarily. So the Buddha didn't come in and say, you know, oh, you know, just kind of suppress the mind. You know, he said, really look at what leads to suffering and what leads to the end of suffering. And he really asked us to look at the habit of constructing. The habit of constructing. Because we might think, well, it's okay, I'm going to exercise that habit over here in this fantasy, you know, in this daydream, in this imaginary world, and I won't exercise that process of constructing over here in my worst terrors and nightmares. But actually, what he talked about, it is a habit. It is a habit of constructing. And if we can undo the habit, we're no longer living in this world where we feel like we're just getting bumped from one construction to another. To undo the habit of constructing. Now, we do this all the time in meditation practice. You know, because you see the number of times that your attention gets drawn away, particularly into the thought world, doesn't it? The thoughts about the past, the thoughts about the future, the imaginations, the fantasies. We see how easily we get entangled in that. And in meditation practice, we offer this very, very simple training, which is first to notice, just to be aware, to begin to be aware of the habit of becoming lost, and then to be able to return. We come back, you know, there is nothing special about the breath, you know, there's nothing particularly special about the body, but we're learning to come back. And when we come back to the breath or to the body, of course, we're always coming back from somewhere. And often what we're coming back from, returning from, is this habit of entanglement, the habit of constructing. So in many ways, that the whole form of meditation is really a training in learning to simplify, learning to let things be, learning to let things go, not pushing away, not trying to get rid of, but actually not volunteering for suffering, essentially. Not volunteering for this sense of entanglement by simplifying, calming, coming back. And I think it is so very important to actually have a context, you know, for the actual mechanics of meditation, you know, because you hear these instructions, you know, oh, just come back to the breath, or just come back to the body. Why? You know, it's very important to understand why. What we are actually doing is we are re-educating the heart. We're actually re-educating the mind in actually being able to hear a sound as a sound. To be able to see a sight as a sight. To know a thought as a thought and a body sensation as a body sensation. And the actual formal practice is actually much more in the service, not obviously of having a perfect breath, you know, or some ideal moment of being present, but the formal practice is really a training in that simplicity, in that capacity to let things be and to see things as they actually are. So we begin the afternoon with the sitting period. So if we just take again some moments to just establish your attention.